I am live and I don't even have my shoes off yet. That's very unusual for me to wear shoes, so it must have been something important today. Actually, I do wear shoes. I wear shoes every time I play tennis, but not often I have to actually get out to a meeting and wear shoes. But the joy of living in the place I live in is that you can go everywhere without shoes and it's not weird. So that's nice. Anyway, good morning, good afternoon. Where are we? It's actually nearly my afternoon, which is, again, quite an unusual time for me to do this, but it has been one of those days. If I'm honest, it's been one of those years, but I think we're all in that same boat. Now, starting where I normally start these days with the sponsor. Sponsor this week is Tynes Security Automation again. This is not the first time. First time Tynes has been there. So thanks to those folks for being up the top today. The biggest return on security investment is getting your time back. How true is that? Scale your defenses and regain control with Tynes Security Automation. I was actually having a chat to people about automated analysis during the week, and we're sort of having the discussion about the fact that the value proposition of tooling is buying back time. People are expensive, and if we can get a little bit of our people time back, then that is worth the investment. So big thank you to Tynes for being there again today. Okay, now, boy, I got a couple of zingers this week with my hair. I'm also getting a haircut this afternoon because I have gotten rather scruffy. So that's going to happen. That's also why I shaved. I look a little bit more presentable. Why am I looking presentable for a haircut? Anyway, bunch of things this week. Let me start on the IoT stuff. And for anyone that is joining, as usual, I can see your comments and so on. I know it's a little bit of a funny time. England has probably gone to bed well and truly by now, based on my watch. So the US side of things. But let's go IoT. So I feel like it's like the heavens opened this week and I finally got the Shelly's working. Now, when I say I finally got them working, the electrician finally got them working. But this was a major, major, major win because the Shellys are the little IoT relays that sit in behind the physical switches in my entertainment room. And the joy of this is, and this was always my dream, right? Like, let me have IoT automation, but without detriment to physical controls. And that was absolutely critical because I always had like the my mum and dad test. So my mum and dad need to be able to make my house work. So if they come over and they're looking after the kids or something like that, they got to be able to push the button on the wall and the light works. Equally, I want to be able to control it via automation things. I want to be able to start turning lights on at certain times of day, for example. So I had a problem where the Sparky came over, Sparky's electrician, Sparky came over and we couldn't get it working. It would work on the app, but not on the physical switch. We were getting like this phantom 140 volt. For those of you in America or Japan, where you both run 110 volt, we actually run 240 volt in Australia, as with most of the rest of the world. And we were getting this weird like 140 volt back. So anyway, turns out the ultimate solution was the particular switches that I'm using, the physical switches, the light switches, forget about IoT for a moment, they have like a little LED on them and you can get the LED to light up when the switch is on. And I've since learned some people do it the other way around. They have the LED on when the switch is off so they can see it in the dark. Now, how you actually get to the switch in the first place when it's completely pitch black, I don't know. That's another topic. I like the idea of the light, little indicator being on when the actual light is on so that you can just look and immediately see which things you need to press to turn off lights if you don't do it via IoT. Anyway, so that little LED sits somewhere in the circuit and you basically just moved it to the other side of the Shelly and now it works. And it's beautiful. And I did post a tweet about this the other day. But what's lovely about it is that everything works as expected. And I know that kind of sounds like, oh, wow, that's really exciting. Shit just actually does what it's meant to do. But what's nice about it is all the lights are off. You look at I've got two switches actually. One lights up like a Hue light strip around a mirror. And when this room is done, I'll take photos and show you. It's epic. And then another one lights up half a dozen LEDs, not IoT LEDs, in the roof. So you look at it, no lights are on. There's no indicators on, nothing. You press one of the indicators or one of the switches rather, the light comes on, yay. And the little indicator, the little LED indicator on the switch also comes on. And then if I look at my Shelly app, I can see that digitally it's on. And then I can turn it off with the Shelly app and the little indicator goes off the light. And of course, the light in the room goes off too. So it does precisely what it's actually meant to do. Now that we know how to do that, now I'm looking around the house going, geez, a lot of switches here, a lot of lights. And I think I'm just about to go in and just order a whole truckload of Shellys and get the electrician to start putting them in behind walls in all sorts of different places. So I was super, super happy about that. I bought another dozen LED downlights and put them in the kids' rooms. So the kids' rooms are, I think the most charitable way of putting it is like a nightclub. Someone suggested it was like a different kind of club, which might not really be the sort of thing you want your kids in. But anyway, it does look pretty epic. And what we're doing at the moment is just like setting up scenes so that they can ask the little Amazon Echo that they've each got an Echo Dot in their room. They can ask for example, to make the room cool. So they can say, hey, turn on cool in Ari's room. But all the lights are terrible for working. So I'm making like work scenes in each one. So in the work scenes, like the lights above their desk just go on like normal bright white light. So turn on work in Ari's room. And then the light comes on and he can actually see what he's doing, which is good. So that bit's really, really neat. Happy about that. And then what else am I doing? So now I'm looking at it and going, I had this epiphany where it's like, wouldn't it be nice if when I walked down the stairs, because I get up super early, like I was up at 4:30 this morning, still pitch black. Wouldn't it be nice if I get up and I start to walk down the stairs and there's one of the little sensors, and I think I've shown people sensors before. This is one that I haven't permanently fixed. I might not permanently fix. Just sits on my desk and it turns on the neon that you see here when I walk into the room. If the light level is beneath a certain amount, doesn't need it when it's bright light. And then when there's no activity for like 10 minutes, it just turns it off. So I might go and get a heap more of these, put them in other places so that as I sort of get up at 4 o'clock, walk down, those lights can come on. Downstairs, I can turn on other lights and I can also get the radio turned on via the Sonos because I know I normally just have that on in the background, listen to the news when I first get up. So that is a pretty cool option. I might do more of that. Somehow I've also found myself today surrounded by a Raspberry Pi. So this is a Raspberry Pi 4. And that is going to become probably a retro Pi for my daughter. So the retro Pi is like a retro gaming console. So I had a little sort of classic PlayStation style console controller floating around, which will go into that. The old screens that I had here on my desk, it's like there's 4 24-inch screens sitting around, which I'd given my son one. So I'll give my daughter the other one, turn that into a retro Pi, which I have promised to make work by the time she gets home from school, which I think might be a little bit ambitious given the way my day is going today, but be that as it may. That's pretty cool there. Home assistant's been good. I know Scott Helm had his home assistant completely die the other day. He seems to have resurrected it, but that did worry me for a little bit. So I did go through and take another snapshot just in case. And look, there's still lots of little nuances, and I do still have a big blog post I've been writing, which I think I'm going to break out into 5 different parts and like post over the period of a week. And they'll just be discrete things about getting the fundamentals right and then getting like Zigbee devices right and then making HomeKit play with Home Assistant, play with Amazon, play with all the different things. So I really want to write that. I just don't want to do it until I can tell a clear, compelling story that people can go and follow. It's really important to me. All right, looking at the comments here. Matt, Troy, could you share a circuit diagram of what finally worked for you? I'm not entirely sure, Matt. Like I got to the point where I'm like, how hard can this be? They're literally like freaking light switches and a Shelly, which should be a simple thing. Surely the electrician can work this out. And he is a top bloke too. I think he's a fantastic guy. He's done some really good work here. And I was like, I will go and build my own like little test circuit on the garage floor or something, and I will get a cable and a light and a switch. And I got to a point where I'm looking around me going, I have got so much stuff to do and very little of it is involving stuff I actually want to do for myself. I was meant to be wakeboarding right now, but I ran out of time. So now I'm sitting here recording videos again. So I just got to the point. So I don't want to have to do this. I literally want to like black box the thing. Electrician, Shelly's, do your magic, send me the bill, job done. So I don't actually know, Matt. Sorry about that, mate. I did take a very clear photo of it and put it in the timeline, so you could probably follow the wires on the photo. But I'm actually happy consciously being unconscious about precisely the wiring pattern. Mind you, he probably looks at the way I join everything up to the Wi-Fi and then have it on different networks and connected things, and he's probably very happy just dealing with circuits. Okay, what else we got in here? Stay safe. Yeah, well, I don't know if that's a COVID thing or I don't stick my finger in the electrical sockets thing, but either way, I will do that. Thank you very much for that. Now, there's a comment here from Marek. Sounds like there's a place for a product that works both as a regular and smart switch. Now, I've had people suggest this, and that there are several problems with this, that there is a superset of switches which are smart switches. Now, they can take several forms. You can have smart switches which you don't have to wire in anywhere. It is literally a switch that works over IP. Now, these are cool insofar as you can put them anywhere, and particularly if they end up being like a Zigbee-based device like this little sensor I've got here as well. Just on these, by the way, the battery on this lasts for 2 years. So I've got a heap of these around the house now. I guess eventually some of them won't work anymore, and I'll just replace a battery and it's job done. I like that idea because they're portable. You can put them anywhere. I don't feel like that's a good solution for lights, and also I'm pretty sure in Australia it's illegal to only be able to toggle a light via a smart switch because you've got to have a physical switch that can kill the power. There are switches which are both IoT and physical, which I think is Marek's point here. They are extremely limited in terms of the aesthetics of them. So because of the design of this room, I had a very, very particular design in mind, the way I wanted them to look. Now, these are using Clipsil Saturn Zen switches. So I wanted switches that were push button, so they didn't have a physical state to indicate on or off because I could turn them on or off digitally. I wanted ones I could get in both black and white because that's going to go on different walls. And I wanted them to look slick. I was very, very particular about these things. I am a fussy bastard when it comes to things like a room design, particularly this room. And again, you'll see why when it's done and I can actually share some photos. So you're very, very limited with your options there. The other thing is I really critically wanted to make sure that all of the mechanical switches and things still worked and I wasn't just predicated on digital. And I know that things like Cassetta, for example, have some light switches that are quite good like that. It just wasn't my style, just not what I was looking for. And I do really like the idea of at the end of that, let's say I just leave this house one day. Okay, I sell it or something to that effect. And someone else comes in. I don't want to have to like give them the entire home automation story. They can come in and everything just works without ever having to understand anything about IP addresses. Now, actually, one thing I did do, and I realized this when Tim, the Sparky, was working on one of the walls. So there's a very dark wallpaper that's going to go on one of the walls. And I'd said to him, look, can we replace the white PowerPoints on there with black ones that were part of the same Clipsil Saturn Zen line so that everything looks cohesive. And then I looked at the two RJ45s on Ethernet jacks on one of the walls and went, you know, we're going to need to get black face plates for those as well. And out of one of them, I had an Ethernet cable and then that went to a Unify access point for my Ubiquiti setup. And then I was starting to send Ubiquiti an email saying, you know, can we get some black skins for the access points? And I realized that now that I'm replacing things on walls, I can actually use the in-wall access points from Ubiquiti. Now, if you haven't seen these before, these are, roughly speaking, the size of an iPhone. And they have the HD ones. They have four Ethernet points in the base of them. One of them is PoE plus as well, so it can provide power, and they also act as an access point. So I was like, hell, just like pull the old PowerPoint off, the old Ethernet jacks off, we'll stick this on, and I can take that big access point, which was kind of floating and sitting around on the floor, and it just is a big disc thing, get rid of that. So that's what I did. And then I realized that when he was doing that, the access points, these in-wall units are pretty much the same size as the actual RJ45 faceplates and jacks. So I think I might just start pulling those off and putting the Unify in-wall jobs on. So I was really happy about that because I can start getting some of these access points that are floating around, these big disc ones, removing them and just sticking the in-wall units on. So I was quite proud of myself for that. Some of the other comments here. Tracy, is roof and ceiling the same in Oz? Yeah, they're both up there. Pretty much the same thing. That's the roof. I know what you mean. Like the roof might be the outside. The ceiling might be the inside. It's the stuff above me. We're not too particular on terms here in Australia. Robert says roof tiles on top, ceiling the plaster above you. It's not an Aussie thing. It's a Troy thing. Yeah, thanks, mate. That's really subtle. That's okay. You know what I mean. You know what I mean. Robert says, RetroPie is simple. Drop an image and done. I have actually dropped the image. So I went and got the Pi the other day, and I got the power supply, and I came home, and I was very excited until I realized I didn't have a micro SD card. So I went back to the shop, and you can see there's a little micro SD card in there now, putting in my face. Actually focuses properly. So that is now flashed with RetroPie. I literally did that before running out from meeting this morning, but I have to now go and get that all set up, and hopefully that will work fine, and she'll come home and she'll be very happy, which would be nice. So Ice God, nice one. Ice God says, that is why you can add the button labels on the Zen. You can look at the icon to see which light. Yeah, so apparently you can get a whole bunch of labels, and I don't think it's actually labels either. I think it's actually physical buttons, so it's not just like a sticky thing, which indicate different things, which I may look at. We'll see. I think it's now pretty self-explanatory, at least, which lights go where. So, and incidentally, I mentioned that one light will do the six LEDs on the roof, ceiling, which are replacing the old halogen jobs. So that's fine. And then another one, I've got this massive mirror which has gone into the room, and it has a channel just behind it that's in probably about 50 mil, and that now has a Philips Hue light strip all the way around it with a bunch of extensions, 10 meters worth of Philips Hue to cover the circumference of this mirror. And I got the Philips Hue because they're great at maintaining state when you toggle the lights on and off. They're also great at some of the other themes, scenes, and things I can do too. And I've just found the Hue much more reliable and configurable than every other light strip I've had before. And they're pricier, but you kind of get what you pay for too. So I got those on a button. And then what's going to happen is the TV goes on a wall where there's like a very dark wallpaper going on behind that. There's going to be another Philips Hue light strip around that. And the TV is now on an IoT switch, not to switch it, but it can measure power. So what I can do now is say, when the TV gets turned on and the power consumption goes off, just automatically turn on the light around it, which is cool. And then I just put one of those on the coffee machine too, with the intention being that if the coffee machine runs out of water, it's got a pressure switch. So the water tank obviously gets light enough, pressure switch goes on, it turns off the power, because the coffee machine can suck up water unattended because it needs to put more on the boiler. So now I can use that little meter to say, okay, the coffee machine is, the switch is turned on, but the coffee machine isn't drawing any power. Therefore, you're probably out of water. And then I can push notification, get Sonos to say something, whatever. I'm going down a deep rabbit hole with all this. We see that we've gone down a real path in the comments here about roof versus ceiling, but I think everyone's got the deal now. It's above us. Question from Mark. Does the Shelly switch allow you to remote dim the lights? Now, there are two issues with this. Number one, the Shelly one does not, but there are other Shellys that allow you to do that. Actually, there's multiple issues with that. In fact, if I do a quick search, wow, my mouse has just gone super janky here. Anyway, I do a search for Shelly dimmer. One of the Shelly units does allow you to do that. I'm pretty sure that one is not yet approved for use in Australia, though. So there's that. The other thing is that one of the I guess inflection points I got to is, if you can dim digitally, but I also want to be able to dim physically, what happens to the dimmer switch? Like if I dim all the way around, for example, do you need a dimmer switch with a little motor in it to physically move it around? Now, one of the alternatives here is that you can get switches. In fact, I've got one in my kitchen, which I vehemently hate, which can dim just by pressing it multiple times. And I just, from a usability perspective, I hate that. Maybe it's the web developer bit of me as well, but I think that there needs to be a positive UX to using devices like this. And a switch that dims just by pressing it, to me, is just a terrible UX. So at the moment, I've just got one of the Saturn Zen switches, which does have a dimmer, so it's only a physical dimmer. I can't dim using the Shelly. Now, what I've found is that just due to the design of this room, I'm tending to just leave those lights off and leave the ones around the mirror on, and I can dim those because they are Philips Hue. The bigger problem I've got at the moment is that LEDs are very difficult to get dim, because apparently the diodes, well, it's not just apparently, it's going to happen, the diodes start to really flicker if the power goes down low enough. And I'm having a lot of trouble actually finding LED downlights that I like that go dim enough. So there's that, actually getting the light color right. And also, I'm just having trouble finding ones that I aesthetically like. So what I really wanted was, and these all fit into 90 mil cutouts in the roof, right? I really wanted ones with a very, very thin bezel, but recessed, so that if you sit there, you're not actually seeing the light. If you look up at the roof, which is also a ceiling, you're not actually seeing the light. You're seeing like a nice glow out of it. So unfortunately, I just can't find any that I physically like. I can find Alibaba ones that are sold in the US, and then I can't get the light right either. So the most first world of problems, but it's just something I want to find the right model for, and then I can do a whole bunch of them throughout the house. Look up Jimmy James on YouTube, Australian-based electrician who's into Shelly. So I got some help directly from the manufacturer of Shelly, who connected me to someone here who was very helpful, and then Tim managed to sort it out anyway. So that, look, there is a really good community around Shelly. I will say that. Iman, can you have a switch behind a bookshelf and turn it on off via your phone? Yep. Yep, you could. Either a Shelly, which is, you know, designed to be secreted away somewhere, or one of the big more physical switches like I got on the coffee machine. Literally plug it into the socket and then something else plugs into there. Now, just so there's anything else, then I'm going to move on to something else. Lots of choice when it comes to switches. Depends how fussy you are, really, doesn't it? And should I be pen testing my house? Well, it's a good question. I think I need to do a whole other thing another time on risks within houses and IoT things. Okay, now another thing. So, why did that open there? Never opens in the window you want, does it? One of my most popular tweets this month, which actually surprised me. Neve. So there is a banking thing, which apparently is not banking, but it's called Neve. And I wouldn't have mentioned this were it not for the fact that it's had 1,600 likes, so obviously it just resonated. But we've got this app, Neve, which is, they say, we're not a bank. So this is at neveapp.io. We're not a bank. We provide the highly secure app to rule them all, big claim to rule them all. And I've just screen capped this because, and of course, someone sent this to me. I don't go looking for this stuff anymore. But you go here and the thing served our HTTP. It's like one of the rare now occasions where a website actually loads over HTTP, and it just happens to be a financial one talking about we provide the highly secure app to rule them all. So I literally just screen capped it on the iPad, circled around not secure at the top of the browser, and then the highly secure bit, and just put a big WTF between it. And apparently that was a very popular thing, 1,600-odd likes on that. I believe they have since actually dropped a certificate on this. Let's have a look, neveapp.io. I still don't know what they actually do. They seem to do like some virtual cards. Oh, look at that, they got a certificate. Who'd they get that from? Let's see, Amazon. Okay, could you maybe not have done that to begin with? The certificate is valid from the 7th of September. So obviously they've only done that a few days ago as well. So maybe they saw the tweet. I don't know. Still not quite sure what Neve does or why they would have stood that up like that to begin with. Very strange. Just looking at the comments here. So someone says, my wife has the same problem with LED lights. They don't recess enough and she was slightly sensitive to light. We are really struggling to find anything to replace our 1980s downlights. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to put in the comments a picture of the lights that I actually like that I just have not been able to find anywhere in Australia, that is. And then if anyone manages to find them, like, that would be absolutely awesome. You know what it's called? It's called a Tammy light. Tammy light downlight. See what that finds. But this is the difficulty for something that's just so common and like seems to be absolutely everywhere. These ones have been really, really hard to find, which is very strange. Google, the page you're trying to visit to is going to go there. If you don't want to do that, go over here. Stay. Oh, here we go. Now, how do I, you ever get that thing where you got something open in one app and you're like, how do I get it to me in another app? So this is open on Safari on my phone, but I want to drop it into Google Chrome over there on the live stream, which means I've got to email it to myself and then I can copy and paste the link. Jesus, better be worth it. Okay, so that says that I've sent it to myself. Okay, here it is. Open up over there. Now this will totally be worth it. Okay, so in the comments here on the live live stream on YouTube, this is what I'm trying to find, this sort of thin bezel. It's a thin bezel and it's recessed and then it's diffused. So there is an opaque piece of inevitably plastic on the downlight. So I'm trying to find something like the Tamulight here in Australia. But to this comment here, my wife has the same problem with LED lights, so don't recess enough. And she's slightly sensitive to light. We're really struggling to find anything. And it's like this nails it. It's amazing. You go to a lighting store and there's a gazillion lights and they're all basically the same and none of them look very good. So fortunately in Australia, we've got a company called Beacon Lighting, and you can go into Beacon Lighting, take any light you want, try it for 30 days, exchange it, get your money back. So I just have a pile of lights I've got to go and take back. And the ones that are actually in there in the room at the moment, Tim brought over from his stash. So they're the least worst ones I've seen. How's that? James says, dimming is how I ended up with the Stitchy rather than Shelley's. Lets me dim the lights via hue, but no physical dimmer, and had the same issue with LEDs dropping out. And this is the thing. Like I can do digital dimming. That's not a problem, but I want the physical dimming. Tradie Trev says, look for high CRI downlight. They are sunken in with a grand color rendition. Tradie Trev, if you find a link for that, if you wouldn't mind dropping it in the comments, I would love to see what you're talking about. And then whilst you're looking for that, I'll go on to the next thing. Oh, I found a comedian ripping off my material. Maybe. So how's this? This is funny. Michael McIntyre, and I enjoy Michael McIntyre. I think he's very funny, actually. He all of a sudden, I started getting all of these messages from people saying, hey, go and watch this. It's really funny. And it's Michael McIntyre doing a skit on the way people create passwords. And basically, he's poking fun at the fact that people have like this perfect lowercase password and it's all been fine. And then they have to create an uppercase, so they just capitalize the first letter. And then they have to add a number, so they add a one at the end. And then they have to add a non-alphanumeric, so they add an exclamation mark. And I was like, this is exactly the talk I've done over and over and over and over again. And I actually tweeted this and I said, I'm feeling like someone is stealing my material, and I've deep linked through to a talk I did at Yale last year. And I've done the same talk many times before as well. So I don't know if he saw it or not. And when I say ripping off, I say that in jest, because I think it's just funny that someone else is doing the same bit. And look, at the end of the day, if we can poke fun at passwords and people maybe change their behavior, then fantastic. So that was funny. Now, last thing, and this one's less funny at all sorts of levels. Just check my DMs before I... Okay. I'll explain why soon. I did a thread on this today. This is a vulnerability in a service called Giggle. Now, I'm going to try and be as professional as I can without Giggle. See how long that took me? I got like 30 seconds out of that. Professional as I can, because some of this is highly unusual. Let's just say that. And some of it is probably very subjective and very personal to some people too. So let's just try and start with the factual bits here. So let me go back to the start of this thread. So there is a service called Giggle, and I'm just going to try and get the actual definition of what this is that joinagiggle.com. And joinagiggle.com is a female social network. And the byline here says, find freelance work, roommate support, and much more. So it is a women-only social network. And the value proposition here, as best I can tell, is that this is a place that women can go and talk to other women and not feel threatened by blokes being a dick or anything like that, which is fair enough. No problems there so far. Now, here's where the problem begins. So this looks like it's run by a lady called Saul. Saul had a dream to move to Hollywood and build a successful career as a screenwriter. Instead, her time in LA turned into a nightmare, 10 years of harassment, abuse, and misogyny. Well, I hadn't read that bit before, where she experienced everything that the Me Too movement represents. Now, there's a very, very strong theme here around feminism, which is fine. That's not really the issue, but it seems to be something that's kind of conflated this. And basically, the first I heard of this is I got looped into a thread yesterday where A guy called Jay Harris is trying to disclose a security vulnerability. And basically, what's happening is it looks like he's trying to disclose a security vulnerability. Seoul is not very happy at the way he's trying to disclose it. Things have ended up on the public timeline, and it's become very, very heated around, somehow around transphobia. Now, as best I can tell, and I've also learned some new words today I'll tell you about too. As best I can tell, separate to the security issue, which I'm going to talk about because it's actually much easier to talk about than some of the other more complex social issues. So separate to this, there seems to be a point of contention where if someone is trans, it looks like they're excluded from this service because, as one of the comments said, they don't have a uterus, which seems to be, this is just such an odd discussion to have, seems to be the criteria for if you are part of this site. Now, one of the interesting things about this site and one of the points of contention, this is such a multifaceted issue, it's fascinating. One of the points of contention is that there is an AI test to establish if you're a woman before you can use the site. Now, there are multiple different issues with this. One of them being the assumption that AI can somehow reliably distinguish between man and woman. There are plenty of guys out there with very feminine-like features. There are plenty of women out there with very masculine-like features, and that's before you even start to get into the whole trans bit. So that is problematic. And one of the things, which was a ray of sunlight amongst an otherwise pretty depressing thread, is there's a guy in here. This is tweeted by the Antisocial Engineer account. And he says, what does it take to bypass the giggle facial recognition that determines a person's gender? Just some lippy and a cheeky smile. And there's a photo of him here where he's tried to register and he's a very blokey looking bloke. It says, you could not be verified. Please try again. And it says, remember, take your glasses off, push your hair off your face. Don't worry about how you look. No one will see this picture. We'll come back to that. Next picture, the guy has put lipstick on. he's smiling at the camera and it looks like his wife over his right shoulder looking on in total bemusement. And apparently this has then got him past the AI facial recognition. And if I was to take a guess, I think he's done more than lipstick. There's maybe some, I think his eyelashes look quite nice. He's obviously done a few other things here. He's had work done. I suspect that the wife looking over his shoulder laughing has probably been complicit. Certainly if it was me, I would not know how to apply lipstick as neatly as what he has done. So good on them, team effort there. Anyway, that's kind of funny. So he's managed to circumvent the AI just by a bit of makeup. So that is a problem there. But then we sort of get back to the actual issue here, the underlying problem. So what was the vulnerability? So the vulnerability, and this is in this tweet thread of mine, there's a blog post that's been written up by Jay. Now, Jay is from Digital Interruption, a UK-based, I believe, penetration testing firm. Let me get my facts right there. Let's look at that. What do they do? Well, certainly a lot of AppSec stuff anyway. So anyway, let's talk about the vulnerability. So what's happened is someone else from, I believe, from Digital Interruption, not sure if it's one of the staff members there or a partner or staff member. Anyway, she has originally tried to sign up to this website, to Giggle. She's gone through the whole process. At some point in time, they've obviously gone, look, let's take a look at what's happening in the background. And they've looked at the web traffic and basically established that there are, I'm not sure if they're strictly speaking, OData filters or OData-like filters on queries. And you can start to remove the filters and it just pulls back all this other data. So just like a massive, massive lack of access controls. And of course, something that's also very, very trivial to discover. And once you start talking about is it trivial to discover, then you have to start talking about, well, who else has it maybe discovered it? It looks like the pictures, I'm going to try and use their words here just so that I don't make any other assumptions myself because there are some legal threats in here as well. The app assured me that my verification pictures, is the one to make sure you're a woman, would not be stored, so not to worry about what I looked like. So my gargoyle-esque visage, her words, not mine, was submitted. I'll get back to that later, and I was duly approved to enter the app. Now, she has managed to demonstrate that she's actually been able to pull back the picture later on. So clearly, the picture was actually stored because she's found one of the APIs which exposes the picture. Now, as we get towards the end here, it says the amount of available data means that with a phone number or name, an abusive partner would potentially be able to find the location of an abused woman and confirm her identity with the verification picture. There's also a section for sex workers who, understandably, would expect any app enabling them to advertise their work to have adequate privacy and security controls. Even if a user deletes their account, that data appears to still be saved by Giggle. Now, that's very worrying if true, because that is a huge amount of very personal information with a complete lack of access controls. Now, where I think it went a little bit off the rails for everyone here, and this is where I learned a new word today. Can I remember the definition of this? I literally had to ask on Twitter today the definition of this. And if I tell you that the word, people will know it before me. Trans exclusion. So, all right, I'll just read what it says. So somewhere in this blog post about the security, they've said, that's when we were dragged into a full-on turf war. Turf being an acronym spelled T-E-R-F. Now, apparently, TERF is Trans Exclusionary Radical Feminist. Now, this is the thing that I learned today. And I believe that that is the term used to imply that this website is A, very feminist, and B, exclusionary of people who are trans. Now, I almost kind of feel like in this whole thing, there is a massive social debate here around views on both feminism and trans. I am not equipped to have informed views on what people should be doing or should not be doing there. But what upset me is that over here, it's like you have all of this personal data exposed. You need to fix this problem. And what seems to have happened here is that because the operator of the site didn't like the channels that were being used or the language that was being used, she appears to have blocked people. So people have been blocked on Twitter. They can't report it. She's then apparently sent information to other people about other ways of getting contacted. And eventually, obviously, they have learned about this vulnerability. Vulnerability has been patched, hence the blog post coming out. As far as I can tell, Digital Interruption and the folks there would not have posted this were it not for the fact that the vulnerability had been patched. But it's just turned into an absolute shit fight, which has now gone very Streisand as well. So I noticed Katie Mazuris, who is very notable, particularly in the bug bounty space. She made a comment in here, and I'll put it in the thread. She says, worst vulnerability disclosure experience of the year so far. The researchers took pains to avoid accessing others' data and made it clear this wasn't an attempt to collect cash. Demonstrable stages of denial and anger in the five stages of vuln disclosure, grief from Giggle, the TERFs. So she's said TERFs as well. I'm going to assume Katie probably already knew what that means, and she was a bit more switched on than me. But wow, like what a trainer. And I tell you what, if you want to blow a heap of time just like slapping your head, just go through and read the threads. It's just, and again, like the thing that gets me is that all of the derogatory comments and things about each other aside, you've got all of this data. Like, fix the bloody problem. Fix the bloody problem first, and then you can go and argue on Twitter about everything else. But like, fix the problem. That should be the number one priority. So anyway, that was unexpected. But I learned some things. I learned a few new things. Just looking at some of the other comments in here, I think we're pretty much up to date here. If anyone does have suggestions, particularly around those downlights, I'd love to hear it, because at least the joy of downlights, as I've shown before, is that they do just like literally plug in. Totally need a haircut. They literally just plug into a normal socket. You drop them in the ceiling. A lot of them are costing around about $30 or something each, so it's not a large investment for something which is a pretty fundamental part of your house. And like I said, Beacon lets me keep swapping them anyway. So if anyone finds some good ones, then please send that through. And last thing I notice here, Centrosphere, did you see that they now have fixed the issues and people should move on? I think both those comments are pretty reasonable, actually, yeah. The thing, as I said, I believe has been fixed because the blog post wouldn't have gone out. People should definitely move on and go back to arguing about something else on Twitter. So on that positive note, I'm going to wrap this up. Next week, God knows what will happen between now and next week. I'll have more IoT stuff. I'll do this at the other end of the day, so it'll be more like... Yeah, will it be? Later in the day for me. I don't know, I'll work it out at the time. Schedule's a bit funny at the moment. Thank you very much for watching, and I shall see you next time.